Welcome to the Everything Coworking Podcast, where you learn what you need to know about how the world wants to work. And now your host, coworking space owner and trend expert, Jamie Russo.
Welcome to episode one of the Everything Coworking Podcast. I'm so excited to have Jeff Jorling as my very first guest on the podcast. Jeff and I totally geek out over space design, things that we've learned in the co-working space over the last few years. Jeff is kind of an expert given his role at Turnstone, and he has an awesome title. In this interview, he describes his work with Turnstone, which is a division of Steelcase, as a self-dubbed analog collaboration advocate, and his advice for designing an effective co-working space that enables connectivity. So give it a listen. It's episode number one, the show notes. We talk about a lot of resources that you can access, some really great articles about space design, the privacy crisis, and whatnot. So you can access that at everythingcoworking.com/one.
Jeff Jorling, thank you for joining us today.
My pleasure. Happy to be here.
Good. Yeah, I bet you're happy to be home this week for once.
Absolutely. Yeah, being a road warrior has its downside every once in a while.
So what's the temperature in Denver today?
You know, I'm not working from a co-working space today. I'm working from home, so I have not even set foot outside.
Nice. But
the sun is out and the snow is dripping, so we'll call it warmer.
Okay, awesome. Okay, well, we're going to ask you about your favorite co-working space in a minute. But so since I have not done a very formal intro of you, tell us about yourself, about your work, and about your fascinating title, which is Analog Collaboration Advocate.
Yes, so I have spent my career with Turnstone, which is a division of Steelcase, the world's largest office furniture manufacturer. And within my role within Turnstone, we get to work with really fun companies, such as co-working and incubators and accelerators and startups. And my role is to get to go and understand and learn about them. So, based in Denver, Colorado, like you mentioned, I travel a lot. So I get to, not only visit and learn about co-working spaces, but experience them all firsthand. So my title comes from, another little interview that I did about how it's so easy to connect today and, you know, count how many connections you have on things like LinkedIn, but to really get to how many people do we really connect with truly day to day, in an analog kind of way. So really get to talk and collaborate and join forces face to face. And, I was talking about some of the tools that we have, in our portfolio of products that support that kind of analog collaboration. And I just sort of fell in love with that term and said, you know, that's what I do all day is help people be an advocate for helping people come together, and actually collaborate, you know, face to face.
So you anointed yourself the analog.
I anointed myself. Okay. Yes, exactly. So, and, yeah, it seems to have gained traction. It's definitely a conversation piece. So I like it.
I love it. Yeah. And you're right. That's part of, it's a big part of what co-working is about, is those face-to-face, real deal, interactions.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we see that, you know, more and more that, you know, it's so easy to feel like you're connected virtually, but to actually come together and connect, it is amazing. I think co-working is really still leading the way in that charge, and we're seeing our big corporate customers really look up to co-working for that.
So you mentioned you travel a lot and you've seen a lot of co-working spaces. When you're home, what co-working, or maybe it's not at home, but what co-working space do you frequent most often?
Yeah, I try not to frequent any the most often. I feel I got to share the love and spread it around. But I think it's usually not when I'm at home. I think I travel so much that when I'm at home, I've got other people to meet with and frequent. So that I really don't meet any of the great spaces, you know, green spaces here in Denver and Battery and Creative Density, some amazing spaces here in Denver that I never get to go hang out with. So I usually like to, when I fly into a new town, is to see that co-working space there. And now there's so many and so many even small towns that it's fun to get to experience a new one. So luckily I'm still in a phase where despite having seen maybe 80 to 100 different shared spaces, that I still try to seek out a new one when I land somewhere.
Awesome. And I think that's probably not going to change anytime soon. So
let's not. Yeah.
More fun in store. What's the most unique co-working or office space you've encountered?
Unique office spaces. I mean, they're all so different. I think, you know, looking at some of my favorite from a design standpoint is, you know, even though knowing what to expect is sometimes very valuable, it's familiar, it's comfortable. It's, you know, spaces like Makerspace that I know you've been to in Seattle, just the customization that everything in the space, the attention to detail, everything in there is so purposeful and thought out. And, you know, a piece of who they are. I think it has to be one of my favorites. And I think there's some that are really doing some really creative things. Obviously, I keep seeing the spaces that have, you know, again, being in Colorado, looking out the window at the snow, you know, there's a couple spaces that have old chair lifts that become benches that hang from the ceiling that you can collaborate on, or old gondolas that have been turned into art projects that you can have a meeting room and a gondola. You know, I'm always just, instinctively drawn to those.
I love the meeting room, the meeting in the gondola ideas. It's fun.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's so cool to think that, you know, meetings can happen in anywhere. Why not embrace our culture here? And you know, to that vein, it's not true co-working, but it's still a shared space, open community. That's an incubator attached to an accelerator that I was just visiting for their install just a couple weeks ago in Telluride, Colorado. And, you know, here's this beautiful shared space overlooking the mountains. And their unofficial claim to fame is they are the only ski-in, ski-out incubator in the world. And so, you know, that has to make definitely my short list of favorite places to work from.
Yeah, I'd like to put that one on my short list.
Absolutely. You have to go check it out. And you know, what's cool about it is, yeah, it's ski-in, ski-out. But if you think about it, it's in the middle of nowhere. I mean, it's hard to get to. Yeah. 6-hour drive from Denver, but they've had this ability to build such an amazing community around the entrepreneurs and the large businesses and the investors that happen to be there either on vacation or living or retired a lot of times in Telluride. That, I mean, to think if they can create a thriving community that for all intents and purposes, you know, is a co-working community, just with the incubation accelerator component, you know, added on top of that. If they can create that in Telluride, it's kind of they can do it there. Why not anywhere?
Totally.
So it's really, really exciting to see that.
Mm-hmm. I know. I interviewed Sam Rosen for the last episode, and we were talking about kind of the future of co-working and the inevitability that there will be some Starbucks, you know, players in the landscape, but how neat it is that we don't think there will ever be a change in, you know, the smaller, more unique operators being a real part of the landscape. And the Telluride space sounds like a great example of that, just really kind of a part of the community in a way that sort of the Starbucks type space, you know, would never go to a smaller town like Telluride, but it can be done really well and be really meaningful.
You know, I think the Starbucks is a great analogy. Starbucks is definitely on every corner, but I think if you look at the aggregate on any city, there's probably a close number of independent coffee shops or bookshops that also serve coffee, you know, for charge in the back. That I think if we look at that analogy in line with co-working, I think it's very synonymous to be able to think of, you know, there's going to be the big players, of course, and you know what you get every time you walk in. It looks the same. It feels the same. And there's value in that. As well as the, you know, I think we're getting to this point with a lot of the larger cities that are more saturated in co-working, this need to differentiate to what is it that makes it different and unique and personable, that you're not going to get from some of the chain, if you will, spaces, be it Starbucks or retail or even co-working.
Absolutely. So Jeff, one of the reasons, well, there are a lot of reasons that I love talking to you about co-working, you, because of your job as analog collaboration advocate. You see so much and you're so a part of the landscape of the future of work that you always have. And Steelcase and Turnstone just do, I've since I've been introduced to your companies, been just really impressed with the amount of research that goes into understanding the landscape of how people work and, you know, turning that into product insights. And so you guys just know a lot about how people work from firsthand research that you do. So you publish a lot of interesting white papers and you have this great publication called 360. Yes. And you recently published an issue on the privacy crisis, which is really just kind of timely. There's a lot of discussion about the open office plan. I mean, you know, really both for corporations who are sort of doing it to their employees and sort of forcing that upon them. And then even for co-working spaces where that's kind of, you know, been a real part of the fabric of what they're about is this open work plan. But the reality is that people need, you know, have different needs when they work throughout the day. So I'm going to read a quote from, there was a recent Washington Post article published the very end of the year on December 30th, and we'll link to that in the show notes. But the title was "Google Got It Wrong, The Open Office Trend is Destroying the Workplace." And the author, who writes for a New York City-based ad agency, describes her transition to an open office plan, and she says, quote, "It felt like my boss had ripped off my clothes and left me standing in my skivvies."
Wow.
And she goes on to say that her personal performance at work has hit an all-time low, and that it's like being in middle school with a bunch of adults. And she talks about how 70% of U.S. offices now have low or no partitions, and that, you know, co-working spaces are not the only offices designed around open plans. Corporate America seems to be kind of going all in on that. And the article is kind of wondering, you know, has everybody just kind of totally messed this up? You know, and I thought the issue had a lot of really interesting insights about privacy and how people work and how spaces can be designed to account for varying needs that people have around space during the day. So I thought, tell us, you know, from your perspective and Steelcase perspective, what's the latest thinking about that?
You're absolutely right. I mean, that was a great article. There's another one that just came out this week that I'll send you the link to, you can add to the notes, from the New York Times, talking about the exact same issue, is that, you know, there are so many great reasons why the open plan adds to collaboration, it adds to an energy, it adds to the culture that is a space. But did the pendulum swing too far? Did we really start to see all the benefits from, I mean, for large corporations, cost savings alone, you cram more people into a space, you take away their private offices, you can get more people. And if we look at the, you know, the huge cost that is real estate, but did that swing too far? And now we're starting to affect the productivity of the workers who don't thrive in that environment. I think it's really interesting. You know, one of the things that we look at, you know, obviously, you know, thank you for your compliments about the amount of research we do. One of the groups that obviously we look at from a research standpoint for trends is co-working. So if you think about who the early adopters in kind of the main field of co-working is today, it's those workers that were given a choice or created choice of where they wanted to go to work. And they moved towards co-working, you know, knowing that they had options. So obviously, if a worker is given a choice, you know, to steal a quote from our friend Mark Gilbert at Liquid Space, you know, when work becomes a decision and not a destination, where do you decide to work then? And all these people move towards co-working. So for, you know, big corporations that don't have, or their workers don't have choice, how do they create these environments that are the type of places people wanted? So obviously, the open plan and very open collaborative spaces had these great energy and collaboration areas and the serendipity that comes there. But like I started to say, that the pendulum, I think, swung too far, and that you can't force anyone into one setting. Just as the cubicle is wrong for a lot of workers, so is the open plan for a lot of other workers. And I think it's really creating a term that we use at Steelcase is a palette of place. You know, it's the power that comes from having a place to work that's right for the type of work that you're working on and the task. So not walking in and saying, walking into your office, your building, your co-working space, and saying, today I sit here because, well, that's where I sit. But today, to walk into a space and say, today, what's the activity I'm doing? Do I need to go heads down in a quiet, focused zone? Well, then this is the environment that allows me to do that best. Or if today I need to take some calls, or I need to throw a bunch of stuff onto whiteboards, what's the space that allows me to be inspired and get that creativity flowing? Likewise, sometimes, you know, you just need to be around other people. You need to be in that Grand Central Station area, if you will, where you can just collide with somebody who you don't know or is a trusted advocate, you know, with your company or not with your company, and creating those kind of zones that you can decide, the worker decide, here's how I want to work today or for this next hour, really becomes interesting. And I think that's where the issue of privacy really starts to play, is to say, you know, we know that there are times when privacy or focused work are important and are needed. And how do we support that? Obviously, everyone in the world of co-working quickly goes to, well, we need more phone booths, because that's when people are on the phone and then just stand up, have their call for a half hour and leave. And we start to take a step back and kind of say, yes, there is a need for that. But when else do you need privacy? And that's really helped us to start thinking about this question differently and not thinking necessarily about privacy for keeping what you're saying private or not hearing what other people are saying, but as an entire different way to work. And some of the work that we've done and the research we've done, we partnered with an amazing author, Susan Cain, who literally wrote the book on introverts.
Yeah.
And kind of understanding that, you know, as we look at the U.S. population and possibly globally, 30 to 50%, depending on how you measure it, of the population could self-relate as being an introvert. And so if we think about, you know, the stereotypes that we think of as an introvert and how that type of person wants to work, it is sometimes in a more private environment. It is sometimes in spaces that need a way to recharge and still be energized in a different way, not necessarily in the loud type of zones that are stereotypically known as in our co-working spaces. So I think that that question really becomes interesting in privacy to say, okay, if on the conservative side, 30% of the population is an introvert, are we then not supporting 30% of our potential customers, members of co-working spaces? Are they just walking in and going, no way, not for me? Or are they joining and then feeling uncomfortable and not reaching their full potential, feeling like they're standing in the office in their skivvies?
Right. So
what are those things that we can do to help create those environments? And it's really exciting. And I know you and I have talked about this too, about, is it walls? Yeah, it could be. It could be creating private places. But is it also ways to help design the space to think about, you know, quiet zones, areas where you can't see the person who's next to you and still go heads down work? Has really become exciting and fascinating, you know, to be able to think of how spaces would differentiate, you know, there. Talking your ear off here, but I guess that's a point. We've done some research recently, Turnstone specifically, about a lounge and other alternative postures where, you know, this article in New York Times talked about ancillary is the new primary, where kind of those spaces that used to be a waiting room or that you'd walk right by have now become a place where you can work and recharge. So what if you could take this call and have your feet up in a lounge posture, but still support the way you need to work? That would avoid, you know, the hot term right now is tech neck. You know, could you still be supported with your technology in a way that allowed you to lounge and still be productive? Would that meet that need for someone who wants privacy or is an introvert to still recharge throughout the day? And, you know, some of the products that we're coming up with that support that and the ways that we can design with those products that still support your technology and work in a lounge setting, I think are pretty exciting trends that I think we're going to see in the world of co-working, as well as other offices really soon.
So for all the existing co-working spaces who opened because they were super into this, you know, right to choose where to work and really focused on community building and maybe a little less on space design because there just wasn't, you know, it wasn't talked about a lot, you know, until fairly recently. So if I have a space, you know, that opened a few years ago and doesn't have kind of the right balance of or the right palettes of place, What are some things I can think about to balance that out a little bit without a total rebuild?
Great question. I love that. And one of the coolest parts about co-working is when you meet somebody who started their own co-working space. You hear the story so many times. I was working at X and I didn't like it. And I thought there had to be something better. Or I was working at home and couldn't stay motivated. So I had to find something better. They couldn't find it and they did it on their own. And that true organic sense of creating a space, especially we saw a few years ago, you know, the people said, I didn't even know that there was a thing called co-working until I showed up at Juicy. It really become exciting to talk to those people. But the challenge there, like you mentioned, were there really was this DIY sense of, well, how much space do people need? Well, how many conference rooms do I need? How much privacy is too much and how open is too open? They didn't really often designers or architects by trade. And so some of the spaces did have to kind of wing it and have changed and adjusted over time. And I think, you know, bringing in a sense of professional design and research and an understanding of, you know, some common traits that we can see within space is really good, interesting. So, yeah, I mean, the extreme is add a bunch of walls, but I don't think a lot of co-working spaces want that, nor the people who are drawn to their co-working spaces want that especially. I mean, there is a certain energy that comes and people are drawn to different spaces. But I think like I sort of mentioned earlier, there's some amazing things to do with design to create zones, for example, to say, this is the area where we encourage you to be as loud and as social as you want to be, where this area is an area that we've designated to be a little bit quieter. And maybe they're the same space. Maybe they're using existing furniture and architecture that's already built into the room, but changing things where the coffee pot is or where the television is or the paint on color on the walls can often indicate, hey, this is a bright area. This is a quieter area, to arranging the way that the spaces face. So, you know, facing a desk towards a window instead of facing the inner area, using some things. You know, we have a product, for example, called a big screen, and it's very creatively named, called a big screen. it is a big screen, and you know, creating kind of little artificial barriers in a way that kind of says, "Hey, there's someone back here," and even though they're sitting there and they're exposed and they're at a height that might say, "Come over and chat with me," they're behind the screen, so it's a do not disturb kind of method. I think adding little things like that into space and kind of rethinking of it holistically, that can really do a whole lot without adding a ton of cost or even, dare I say, you don't have to buy a lot of furniture to make your space support the needs of many different types of users.
Yeah, I think one of the sort of ahas for me, and I think this was a turnstone insight, was that privacy, and you mentioned this earlier, doesn't necessarily mean walls. It can be more of a perception, more of a feeling of privacy that could mean, right, a plant, or, you know, you're kind of behind a lamp, or, right, you're facing a window. So you can't see everybody else in the room, even though they can see you, but that's still, you know, a mental state of privacy, even if it's not a physical state of being behind a wall.
Absolutely. You know, a former way that we used to talk about this is, you know, acoustical privacy, visual privacy, and territorial privacy.
Okay.
This is simple as saying, hey, I got my little zone here. Don't encroach upon my space. I remember working on a design experience workshop, and one of the feedback that we got from a couple of users were they don't want their desk to touch, and that was their big thing. That was their space. They didn't want they were naming names of people who they did not want their coffee mug and their papers coming over onto their space. And, you know, it seems so elementary school, keep your crayons on your own desk.
Right.
But at the same time, that same type of this is where I work, I just need my own space there, holds true. So I think, yeah, there's a lot of amazing things you can do. You know, I mean, we've all seen it in the world of coworking, is the official do not disturb sign is headphones. You know, you joke that probably half of them probably aren't even on. It's just a do not disturb. And there's some cool startups like Flocked, and there's another one that was just on Kickstarter where it's a USB green or red light that can go on that clips on the top of your laptop that says, you know, red is do not disturb, green is please come, I need to talk to another human being. That's why I joined coworking in the first place.
Right. It's kind of times when there are products that support our indicators for need to talk or not talk.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think one of the other things too is when we think about walls, you know, walls and even other partitions in the world of co-working have taken on a bad rap, and you know, as they should, because we got too divided. We segmented our spaces way too much. Is to rethink, if you were going to put walls up or you already have walls up, what does that mean? How do you create environments within those walls where you do have to have them that aren't about, you know, six people also having a loud meeting or a phone booth where it's just to take the call, but to use those private spaces as recharge areas? You know, if you make one, our CEO of Steelcase is a self-proclaimed introvert. So his small walled office that, as you'd imagine, the leader of a Fortune 500 company doesn't get to spend much time by himself. But when he does in his private office, he wanted it to feel like a library. So there are lots of books and it's designed to be a place where he's able to really focus, and he wanted it to feel like kind of a den. So you think, you know, the traditional private space within a co-working space is meant for quick calls or for a team area. But to think of, could you have zones that are non-reservable just for touching down, that are more kind of recharging areas, could be really interesting. And it won't be right for all spaces, of course, and that flies in the eye of some co-working cultures. But I think it becomes really interesting to start thinking about those spaces differently.
The sort of open plan community culture that has been co-working, I just wonder if we'll see that shift a little bit as people learn more the language of how to articulate what they need, and it becomes acceptable to sort of have these preferences for types of, you know, to use your term again, sort of palettes of space. I think as consumers learn more about, you know, what's possible in a space, you know, the hurdles might be a little bit higher in terms of what they're looking for.
Oh, completely. I think there's two things happening there. So I think, you know, as we've talked about, the number of co-working spaces keeps doubling each year, is there was so much built up demand for a better place to work that wasn't Starbucks and it wasn't home, that it was, I think, early on in some communities, And not to in any way diminish the work that a lot of the earlier pioneers put into the world of co-working, but with a lot of built up demand, there was a lot of, oh, thank goodness there's something new here that I can work on. This is great. But as we start to see in markets like San Francisco, where you can see the next co-working space from the door of the next one, well, now you're getting people that are starting to shop communities and start to think, which of these spaces is right for me? Based on the people who are in there, based on the way the community interacts. But I think space is going to start to play a factor in that as well. As you walk in, which one feels right? It feels like the place that you can work. So as we start to need to differentiate co-working spaces within markets, different cities, obviously spaces become much more of a component to that.
Can you talk a little bit about, so your headquarters in Grand Rapids was recently redesigned, right?
Yeah, recently it's under a constant redesign.
Okay, that's what you do. Yeah,
it's what we do. It's certainly hard for us because when you live in this, like any member of a co-working space, it'd be really hard to work anywhere else of a space that wasn't so focused on how they work. So we're constantly redoing different zones and areas. One of the ones we have done recently is our work cafe. Mm-hmm. So we took our existing, to be honest, very boring, very gray corporate America work cafe, cafeteria, get your tray, get your burger, and go sit at a table and get back to work. And we changed it into a place that was about meeting and communication and collaboration. I mean, it feels very co-working. It's amazing where we wanted food to be the destination to say, this is the reason to bring people together with giant monitors that share company-wide information as well as market information and, you know, stories of our people with places where you could have a meeting over a meal or you grab a cup of coffee and sit in collaborative type of settings, you know, lounge type of settings or areas that are still the long tables, but are designed in a way that encourage, if not require you to possibly sit next to someone you don't know who's from a different department and who knows what kind of serendipity, you know, might come out of that. It's co-working for one big company. If I so dare type of make that analogy, really was a lot of fun and it's exciting. I mean, the number of people and the amount of time people spend down in that area, is really exciting. We've taken that philosophy through our entire, corporate building and campus right now, and if to the extent, and I will get this number wrong, it's in the 360, I think, more accurately. But if everybody were to show up and try to sit, in their space in the designated, you know, traditional desk, we would, I think, be we would be over full by a margin of about 3-1.
Nice.
Of not having it, because we realize people aren't, you don't sit and go heads down all day long. You meet with other people. You're going to work from different areas. The work cafe might be the right place for that type of activity. So you might work there for 4 hours. Now when you want to go heads down, there's a desk that's designed for heads down work. Or if you want to stand, we have plenty of standing desks or walk stations, you know, with treadmills. You know, choose what the work is, and that's how the space will designate it. So we really get to practice what we preach, and it's really exciting. And it's never the same too. You come in one day, cause I make it back there about once a month. You come in one day and it's brand new and completely different. And the space you were looking for yesterday isn't there anymore.
Somebody's rearranged your living room.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I mean, I think it's a neat model and, you know, probably some foresight into, you know, what's happening. I mean, we talk a lot about co-working, you know, in terms of like a place where you go to work, but it's becoming, you know, more of a verb and something that bigger companies are trying to emulate a little bit and figure out how to bring that culture for people who are going into the office. You know, wouldn't it be amazing if that place was the place they would choose if they could, because the environment supports what they need. And I think that's a little bit of what the article talked about is, you know, we're still at a point where, yeah, unless you're in a co-working space, even though you're mobile, it can be pretty hard to get work done in places that aren't designed for work, like a Starbucks and like a, you know, your lobby and your gym and whatnot. So when you have really important work to do, you know, give people an office that's really designed to be the kind of environment that they want to work in, but really supports them from a technology and collaboration perspective.
Yeah, you nailed it. And I think that's probably one of the hottest issues we see from our corporate clients is they come to us all the time saying, we want to be co-working. And you quickly have to go, do you really know what that word means? Are you just wanting more open plan, or do you really embracing what it means to have a culture and a community where people are, you know, encouraged to collaborate and run into each other and talk to each other and meet somebody new and all the things that, you know, we know that makes a co-working space more than just a space, that it makes it a co-working community. And we really start to have the opportunity from what, you know, I've learned from you and other co-working spaces is how to talk about what that really is and decide, is that really what they're looking for? Are they just trying to save a few bucks on their real estate by cramming people into a smaller space? And if that's so, they don't need to talk to me to do that, which is kind of sad. And I think it becomes really interesting to say, how do we create those places and start having this conversation to say, would your people be better off if you sent them out and let them choose their own workspace to work out of? And then the question we get to help answer is, then with your existing corporate real estate or what your real estate footprint could look like, what do you want to do with that space? What's the office of the future going to look like? Will it be places for people to go heads down work? Possibly, if that's the best place to do it, if home and Starbucks isn't it, or will it be places where you can work with the people that you work with and much more collaboration zones and places for interaction, both socially and, you know, technology, how you interact with types of technology they couldn't possibly have at home or at Starbucks. Really starts to get excited how that blends with, it's not an either or co-working or corporate, that the worker then chooses not only that where they work once they're within a space, but literally walk out your front door or not walk out your front door and decide, where am I going to go to work today? Maybe Starbucks is the right solution for a few hours. Maybe co-working is the right solution for the afternoon. And maybe tomorrow I spend all day in the corporate office. Really becomes really cool, kind of that taking that palette on steroids.
Sort of just thinking how funny it is that we both use words like exciting when we talk about workplace. But it's neat that we're in this phase of, and I think I always think this whenever something changes, it seems so obvious. Like, why didn't this happen earlier? But you know, that the world is starting to look at work and like get higher on the hierarchy of work needs. Like, it's not just about, you know, okay, do you have a desk and a phone, you know, but it's about, well, you spend a lot of time working and it should be the best experience possible. And you, I love, I'll include links to these, and it probably sounds funny for me to keep referring to your 360 issues, but I just think they're so well done. And there was one that was all about well-being, and it's a personal passion of mine, but it makes so much sense to be thinking about, you know, how do you help people feel better and be healthier and be happier at work, and to have people be thinking about that, whether they're doing co-working spaces or not, but to have companies be thinking about, you know, what makes people feel better at work and how can they design for that?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's that's, you know, something really easy to, again, to get excited about, where, you know, and not just personally, but if we think about, I mean, the articles that wrote and this new catchphrase that sitting is the new smoking,
yeah,
is just the tip of the iceberg to look at the data. It's not surprising to anyone that, you know, offices traditionally, and not the building so much as, or the furniture, the chair, as much as it is what we do while we're there, it's pretty much sit and stare at a screen. And the junk food that goes with that and the neck problems that might go with that, you know, is no one is surprised when we realize and we learn the numbers that say, this isn't very healthy. And so I think, you know, a lot of traditional thinking has been, well, what can we do to mitigate some of that, those health risks? But I think what we've had the opportunity to do that is really fascinating is to flip that question on its head, to really ask, well, instead of saying, how can you leave the office having hurt yourself less,
right,
done less damage, but let's reverse that. What if you were able to leave the office healthier physically and emotionally than when you got there? What would that do to your psyche or your willingness to go into work? And whether that's, you know, in our work cafe, we did something as simple as our salads and healthy options are subsidized by the cost of our burgers. So if you want a option, it's super cheap. If you want a burger, sure. Sometimes you just need a burger. It's going to be more expensive because it's paying, so we can get you a salad really cheap. Simple things like that. But now you start to take on that philosophy throughout the entire space to say, if you need to get up and walk, well, then get up and walk. And how do you, you know, we can look at the numbers and the trail that says, you know, if you're not comfortable at your desk, you're going to be less productive. If you're less productive, then you have more stress because you're not getting as much done. If you're more stressful, then you're your diet choices and your exercise choices carry on throughout the day. Once you get home, you don't sleep as well. You come in the next morning, you're more tired, you're less likely to be productive, you make worse posture choices, and it just spirals out of control. You know, I mean, there's some people that go so far as to say, you know, the office could be killing you. Where could you literally save lives by working out of a co-working space? I'm sure some co-working people would love us to be able to say yes to that.
Totally.
Taking it a little bit far, but you get the idea there.
I love the drama, yes.
Exactly, yeah. The brochure that says work here or die.
Yes.
Would sell some memberships. But I think, you know, not taking it that far, it's still that question of could you be healthier when you left work? Or I shouldn't even say left work, when you stopped working for the day as work-life balance has really become work-life integration. Could you be healthier throughout your day because of where it is that you chose to work? It's a fascinating concept.
Yeah, and the kind of related to the workspace design, and I think why people like co-working spaces. So I just pulled up the issue and talks about the six dimensions of well-being in the workplace. Two of them are authenticity, so being yourself, and then belonging, being connected to others. And I think those are two qualities that are pretty easily met in a co-working space, which is probably one of the reasons why, you know, we were talking about earlier, even if it doesn't, you know, it was in a most perfectly designed space, you sort of your well-being, some of your well-being needs are being met, and meaning, having a sense of purpose, vitality, get up and go. And those things can be done, you know, through designing a space where people can interact more, like your corporate cafe that you were talking about. I mean, those redesigning the corporate cafe to do the things that you talked about really play into those things, you know, being yourself and being able to connect to others. So not just giving up the burger, but.
Absolutely. That's the tip of the iceberg is, you know, I wish being in the industry that I am, that there was one piece of furniture, one artifact that would make a co-working space, or any office space, magically more collaborative or connected. But you nailed on the head. It's that sense of belonging. It's that, you know, how do we help create a community through the artifacts and through great design and furniture and space that help that sense of belonging, that sense of authenticity? You know, so many cultures within an office are, you have your weekend, you have your after work self, and then you come to work and you're encouraged or required to almost be a different person. And I think one of the beautiful things about co-working is you're yourself in that space. You don't check your personality or who you are authentically at the door. You let that come through, and that shining through builds upon other people. And that's what gives the space its culture as you connect with people, you know. Really, really becomes exciting. I think that's where the rest of the world can learn a lot from. Jeez, be yourself at work.
It's going to happen. So for people who are thinking about designing spaces from scratch, either co-working spaces or more collaborative workspaces in a corporate setting, what resources do you recommend for them to start thinking about these things and have the right framework for starting their space design?
Absolutely. I'd say, you know, obviously, selfishly, I'm going to have to say to start, you know, some of the 360 articles, you know, learning about, and there's some other amazing publications. We mentioned the very popular media is also publishing a lot about what the trends are within the ways and what we know about people working. Is read all those kind of things. I'd also say then talk to the members of the co-working community. It part of that culture that happens within a co-working space seems to happen at the macro level as well, with people willing to share what they've learned and how they got there in a large way, wanting the movement to keep growing and rising tide raises all ships. I think we're still in that phase with a lot of co-working spaces. I'd also say, you know, seek some professional help. A lot of the stories that I hear about people as they design their spaces, there's a lot of learning pains and they're trying to figure out every nuance themselves. And it's some things that, you know, talking to a professional designer, over beers or hiring their services or, you know, reaching out to someone like me who has some designers that I have access to who can help with these kind of things. They know some of the basic things that a co-working operator just starting will be ripping their hair out of trying to understand. How much room behind a chair and a wall do you really need? Is it 24 inches or 36 inches or 60 inches? You know, how close can I get people together? How many people can I get in this private office? There's some things where instinctively we can figure them out, but a professionally trained designer will kind of know those things as rules based on decades of learning of just human interactions and work and space. And I think allowing for that and also planning for different needs of different users. I think there's very often I hear stories of people that like to work a certain way, and they design their type of setting and their co-working space around how they like to work. Not necessarily wrong, but there might be someone else who likes to work in a different kind of way, or different environment, or different standing versus sitting, or lounging versus standing. You know, allowing for all those different users to have different levels of choice will have long-term effect. I think the other thing that I see in every co-working space, especially the great ones, is as you design your new space, you're going to get something wrong. There's going to be some area that just for whatever reason is just a dead zone and no one wants to work there, or it just feels funky. And just realizing that making your space flexible and fluid enough to go, what is it about this corner or this entranceway or this desk that no one wants to work there? And how do I make it better and improve it? I think realizing that up front, that it's not going to be perfect,
yeah,
and change it is always big. The last thing that I'd mention on that is focusing on connectivity. I think connectivity is what makes a co-working space great. And that's not just connected to people. I think it's three things. It's social, spatial, and technology, or technological, I guess you could say. Is that how do you connect people to other people? They need that social interaction. You know, how do you connect people to the space? How do they stay connected within the space? And how do they connect to the technology they need, whether it's a cell phone signal or a Skype or you know, getting to the cloud? And I think as you focus on those three different things, the community and the culture will come together.
I love it. Those are great. Okay, we will include all those tips in the show notes and links to myturnstone.com and Steelcase and the 360 issues that we referenced. Jeff, thank you so much for your time today and for sharing your wisdom and your perspective. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure. This was a lot of fun, Jamie. And, you know, to anyone listening or following up, anything I can do to help or any specific questions, please reach out to me. Or if I said something you didn't agree with, I'd love to be challenged when, you know, it's my humble opinion on where the movement's growing. But always up for thoughts.
Awesome. And we'll put your contact info in the show notes as well. Thank you so much, Jeff.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Everything Coworking. Be sure to click the subscribe button so you can stay up to date on the latest trends and how-tos. Until next time.